to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Thursday already. Wow. Thursday already edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR. The sun is starting to pop out. If it hasn't yet in your community, it probably will pretty soon. And hopefully we're looking at some sunshine and blue sky the rest of the day today. We have a good program today. Special guest, whom we'll introduce in just a moment or so. Later on the program, we're going to be talking with Jim Miller, who is a syndicated newspaper columnist. His column appears in like 400 papers around the world. The discussion will center on the talk of a lifetime, how to start conversations with loved ones to find out what matters most to them and how they'd like to be remembered. And this is sometimes not the easiest thing to bring up with parents who are aging or grandparents who are aging, you know. What are their funeral plans? Do they have their legal papers all in order and that sort of thing? So how do you start this conversation? Well, Jim Miller will have some tips for us later on the program. But first, we are most happy to say hello for the first time to the new president of Slippery Rock University, Dr. William Barry, and he's here in the studio with us right now. Dr. Barry, nice to meet you. Nice to have you here.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks so much for having me. It's been, you know, it's been great to come to Western Pennsylvania, and it's been, you know, great to get introduced on your show.
Well, it was back in March, mid-March, I believe, when I got the news release that you had been named the new president of Slippery Rock University, and that you would be taking over in early July, and that's when you got here, right?
Late June, actually. I got here about a week before I started. My official start date was July 1st, and my wife and I arrived about a week before to begin to settle in.
Mm-hmm. Other than the fact that you came here, obviously, for interviews, had you ever been in Western Pennsylvania before?
I'd passed through. We lived in Ann Arbor, Michigan for many years, so I had stopped through in Western Pennsylvania, but this is my first time of any length, and we had taken a couple of trips out here during the interview process just to sort of poke around and make sure that it was a place we'd be comfortable living before we committed even to do the final interviews.
Mm-hmm. You lived in Ann Arbor. That's University of Michigan
yep.
territory.
Yeah, that's where I did my doctorate, four years in Ann Arbor.
Oh, wow.
And so in some ways, I feel like I'm coming back to the Midwest being here, and it's just great to come back.
So if you were at Ann Arbor, that means you were in the big house a time or two, I suppose.
Huh? I was in the big house, and little did I know when they announced the Slippery Rock scores in the big house that I'd somewhere, you know, sometime be here.
Well, actually, a couple of years ago, the Rock played a game at the big house.
I was gone by then.
Yeah, that was fairly recent.
I was there in the 90s, but I do remember the Slippery Rock scores. And one thing I did find out, too, is a mentor of mine went to the University of Texas. And when I told him I was taking this position, he said that they used to announce them at the Texas games, too. So we're famous all over the place.
All over the world, actually. Yeah. I was doing a summer school in Ireland several years ago, and I was having lunch with one of the guest lecturers. She was a lecturer in English at Trinity College. So we're having lunch, and she wanted to know where I was from, and I said, well, about halfway between Pittsburgh and or between New York and Chicago. I figure people in Ireland would know those two cities. And she said, oh, have you ever heard of Slippery Rock?
That's funny. That's great.
And I said, have I heard of Slippery Rock? I live about 10 miles away. She had been a guest speaker there.
Oh, that's
several
fantastic.
Years prior to that, so, you know. You never know when Slippery Rock's going to pop up somewhere.
Well, it's funny. Since I started to interview and then after I accepted the position, I would see it in places I never realized it existed. And one of the funniest ones was last year during March Madness, the Chronicle of Higher Education actually did its own brackets of the most unique college names. Slippery Rock won.
<That's>
and
great.
I voted.
Well, tell us a little bit about where you come from. You most recently have been provost at a school in New Jersey.
Yes. This is about my 25th year in higher education, depending on whether you count grad school or not. And I most recently was at Georgian Court University, which is a small private school right near the Jersey Shore. And I would say the saddest part about leaving that other than people and friends was the fact that I used to live a mile from the beach. But my wife and I really love the topography here. My daughter goes to Lehigh, and one day we were sitting at an event on her campus, and we actually had the conversation, which do you like more, the rolling hills of the Lehigh Valley or the beach? And if you had asked me about a year before then, I would have said the beach because it was still kind of novel. I grew up on Long Island, so I was used to the beach. But we began to realize we missed more of the topography because I lived in Bucks County for many years. It has some wonderful topography too. So it's great to come back here for that. But I was a provost, which is the chief academic officer at Georgian Court. It's a small private school that is struggling to survive like a lot of small private schools, and it's doing a good job, and I think Georgian Court will be here in 100 years as well. But one of the things that was really great about looking at Slippery Rock from Georgian Court is Slippery Rock isn't worried about survival. At a time when a lot of schools, even a lot of state schools, are wondering, how are we going to turn the lights on in 2 years? How are we going to attract students? Slippery Rock is a great story of success, and I owe that to my predecessors, Philip Way, who was the interim president, Cheryl Norton, who came before him. They really positioned the school to be successful over time. They built programs that attract students because they lead to good-paying jobs in the region. They've been very attentive to what are the growing industries here, what would local students want. And the students are voting with their feet. We've had record enrollments the last few years, and I don't think we'll set a record this year, but we're still going to be very strong.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is astonishing to see that Slippery Rock continues to grow in enrollment, and some of the other state schools here in western Pennsylvania have not only had losses, but in some cases significant losses in enrollment. Slippery Rock continues to grow. I don't know, Robert, 8,500, was that the last, 8,500 students, was that the last enrollment?
We're a little larger than that now. If you include graduate students, we're just under 9,000, 8,900 or so, 8,900. Mm-hmm. And I'll credit that to developing programs that are unique. We have one of the only petroleum engineering programs around. Our safety management program is highly regarded nationally. And so once you start building destination programs like that where students want to come and they see the value of it, we have new engineering programs being approved at the state system right now. And I would predict that in 5 to 7 years, there'll be a bona fide full-blown School of Engineering at Slippery Rock. Mm. And those high-skill, high-demand jobs are what folks are looking for. The students today, they're an interesting group, and I count my kids in that. My kids are 21 and 23, so I've got a college senior and a recent graduate. And you have to remember, they grew up in the middle of the greatest recession of their lifetime. So they're looking at college with different measures of return on investment. I will never minimize college to you spend this much in tuition and this much as your salary, because that diminishes the issues of citizenship that come out of a college education. It diminishes statistics like something I found out is that someone with a 4-year degree is less likely to get divorced and more likely to report they're happy in their later adult years. So I'll never diminish those, but people are saying, How am I going to pay for this relatively large investment? Mm-hmm. And having really good statistics around career placement is helpful. It really is helpful.
Colleges have had to morph in some cases, particularly I would think with Slippery Rock University. At one time, a few decades ago, was known mainly because it turned out a lot of good teachers. In fact, it was one of the earlier names. It was Slippery Rock State Teachers College. I don't know, that's several decades ago.
It was the Slippery Rock Normal School to start, which were the normal schools were teacher preparation. Mm-hmm. The College of New Jersey, where I worked for 16 years, was a normal school as well. So I know the history of the schools.
We still need teachers, but we need nowhere near the number that we used to. I'm sure there's still teacher education programs.
We're very proud of our teachers, and we still produce the type of teachers you're talking about that are central to the school systems in our area. And teaching, like many professions, is a cyclical one, and we'll need more teachers when teachers hit the retirement bubble. Just like nurses a few years ago, there was a large, you know, nursing need, which is now regional. Some regions still need them, some don't. But that has a lot to do with the demographics of the profession. So we will always produce fine teachers, and we do produce fine teachers. The difference now is one of proportion. We produce people who do lots of other degrees. And I don't want to, as we talk about professional programs, give the traditional liberal arts degrees any kind of short shrift in this, because the liberal arts in their essence teach people to become strong communicators. They teach people to read and interpret data richly. They teach people to read text in a different way. I have a liberal arts degree. My undergraduate degree is in economics, but it's a very pure liberal arts economics degree, not a business degree. I had three careers by the time I was 30, and I believe my liberal arts education allowed me to learn the new skills I needed as my career changed. So I don't want us to go off on the tangent of professional education, which I think is important and has been really helpful to our growth, and it's helpful to the community. But I don't want to lose the fact that if you come in and you want to be an English major, I don't want to suggest there's something wrong with that, because you can have versatility there and you can learn in different ways. And there's a great statistic that says that the majority of Fortune 500 CEOs actually have liberal arts degrees. So I think that there's room for the full array of programs for different students. And there's also room for multiple majors. A student can do an English degree and a business degree. There's no rule against that. So you see students at least taking coursework that helps them focus. You know, if you take that English degree, but you want to go home at Thanksgiving and you don't want to be badgered, what are you going to do with an English degree? You can also take courses in our business program. You can take courses in a more applied program and have that mix. You know, I think about an education as preparing someone not only for their first job but for their best job. And we're often, people ask, well, what are your graduates earning? I think a better question is what position are our graduates in 10 or 15 years from now? And in truth, we can't tell you as well as I'd like us to, because the databases don't exist as richly as I'd like. And that's one of the things I'd like to work on at both Slippery Rock. But I think that's actually a larger higher ed question is how do we track our graduates so that we see them 10, 15 years out? Because right now, the people we track the closest are the ones who stay active in the Alumni Association. That's not necessarily a full representation.
We're talking, if you're joining us a little bit late, and many folks do at this hour, you listen to the radio in the car, who's on with Dave today. It's the new president of Slippery Rock University. He's on the job for, since the beginning of July.
It's about 40 days.
Not all that long. His name is Dr. William Barry. He was named the new president of Slippery Rock back in March, and you'll be getting ready for your first semester as the top administrator. I don't know yet the exact date of the fall semester. It's got to be coming up pretty soon, though, right?
In fact, our first students are on campus now. Some of the athletes are back to practice already. And in about 2 weeks, we do our week of welcome for our first-year students, and classes start soon after that. And I'm excited as can be. You know, my wife and I live on campus. We have two dogs who we walk on campus all the time. And my dogs, I think, have a greater Twitter following than I do at this point. Sure. And there's been a few students who've actually tweeted back after seeing a picture of the dogs. One of them said something along the lines of, I'm not going to lie, I want to go back to school early just to play with the dogs. So we are looking forward to seeing a large group of students. I've met a few here and there. We have some here for the summer. We have some students who are working on campus. So I've met a handful. And my first meeting on campus was with our student government leadership. They came in during the summer, and I thought it was important to see them as the first group. And it was both in content I wanted to talk to them, but there's also something I think importantly symbolic that the students are first, and they really are. So they're why we exist, and I can't wait to get them back.
Do you think it's important for a president to be seen, to walk the campus, to be recognized by students?
I do, particularly early on in the presidency. You know, presidencies, like lots of things, have seasons. And this season for me is one of learning and listening. As I said earlier, I'm very fortunate that I'm walking into an institution that is really thinking about how it thrives. I don't have to work in a crisis mode. There are some presidents in the Pashy system who are coming and they're staring at a lot of red ink on ledgers. I'm not. We're a very healthy school financially. And so I don't have to work in a crisis mode. It gives me the time to get to know our faculty, our staff, and our students really well. And the best way to do that is to talk to as many as you possibly can. My wife Leah and I are actually buying meal plans in the dining hall this year. So, and we'll do probably half to two-thirds of our meals, at least our dinners, in the dining hall. And that is because once in the first couple of weeks will be novel, and I know that, and people will kind of stare and they'll try to figure out if they can talk to me. But once I'm there regularly and I'm eating with folks regularly, people's guards go down a little and they tell you the truth. And it's really important that I hear the truth, not what people want the president to hear or people think they should say to the president. And I'm hoping that'll be a useful tool to really understand our community and really understand what are the next things we need to do in order to just maintain our excellence.
You know, I saw a release from the Public Relations Department of the university, I don't know, it's within the past couple of weeks, about something new in one of the dining halls, I think the biggest one, where they're growing their own kale and lettuce and so on. That's something like hydroponic.
Aquaponics.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
I tell you, that's a far cry from the dining hall when I was in undergraduate school.
I have to tell you, the dining halls at Slippery Rock are probably some of the finest restaurants in the community. And I feel bad for the small business owners in town because I actually think it's a struggle for them to compete sometimes. You know, they all want students to come down and buy pizza. The dining hall's pretty good food. I had lunch there yesterday. We're in summer mode now, so it's sort of camp food, and it was still really good. Mm-hmm. And I did see the aquaponics project, and it's exactly what you describe. It's plants that are only in water, not in soil, and it gets attached to a fish tank, basically. And so the nutrients from the fish waste is what supports the plants. And there are places like I've heard there's a warehouse in New York City that has, you know, 20 feet tall, 7 acres of this, and it multiplies because you can grow year round, mm-hmm. and it's not weather dependent, and the only real cost is the electricity for the lights and the food for the fish. And we've been working with Bob McCafferty, who is the owner of North Country Brewery. He's got an aquaponics, really kind of an experimental aquaponics section in his brewery now. But he's looking to expand that as well. And one of our faculty members has worked with him on that. And he's looking to actually eventually use the fish from the system to be the tilapia on his menu as well. Hmm. And if he can get it so that the electricity, at least in this time of the year, is solar run, then the only cost is the fish food. And it's a really interesting way of sustainable farming.
The only thing that I had heard of along these lines were the tomatoes that you will find sometime in the winter in a grocery store that are grown, hydroponically. This is something new to me. You need a little kale or lettuce in the dining hall. You just pick it right off the...
It seems to work best, and I don't know the science of it well enough, but it does seem to work. Everything I've seen has been leafy green kind of things. It hasn't been like a tomato plant or something like that. I don't know whether that's impossible or whether it's just easier to start with leafy greens. But if you go into our Boozle dining hall, right next to the salad bar is this aquaponic station. And I was looking at it yesterday and I actually asked a student, so are we supposed to pick our own stuff off of it? Or is it just there to show us where the stuff in the salad bar came from? And I didn't have an answer, so I didn't pick it off. I thought, because no one will tell the president that he's doing something wrong, and I didn't want to break their system.
Let's take a quick break, and we have much more time to chat with and get to know the new president of Slippery Rock University, Dr. William Baer. We'll pick up our conversation with him here on It's Your Turn on WISR in just a moment. One of our sponsors on the program today, the good folks at the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler. By the way, we were just talking about the aquaponics program. What they've got going right now is their collection of excess garden produce program. And they've done this for quite a few years now. Been very, very successful. Listen, if you're a backyard gardener and you've got produce left over, think about donating it to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul Food Cupboard. And they have an easy way to do that. They have a collection every Saturday morning from 8 a.m. until noon. You just take your excess produce to the St. Michael the Archangel Parish Hall. It's right behind St. Michael's Church on Center Avenue on the south side of Butler. They have people there to collect it, and it'll be in the food bank first thing on Monday morning. And what a treat that is for the families who rely on the St. Vincent de Paul Food Bank. Fresh local produce. They don't want all your stuff. When your family's had enough and you've given to the neighbors and Aunt Ethel and everyone else and you still have some left over, think about it. It's a great way. You'll feel better about it, too. You know, they like to say we stand tallest when we stoop to help others. It's a wonderful thought. From the folks at the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler. We'll be back with more of It's Your Turn right after these words.
Hi, this is Howie Pinckney with Pinckney Capital Management in Portersville. Today, many people need help managing their investments. The investment options available today can be confusing. If you would like to talk to someone for help, why not call me for an appointment? Howie Pinckney at Pinckney Capital Management, 1284 Perry Highway, Portersville, Pennsylvania. My telephone number is 724-368-4224. Securities and advisory services offered through Commonwealth Financial Network. Member FINRA, SIPC, a registered investment advisor.
Welcome back, good friends. We're chatting with the new president of Slippery Rock University today. He's with us here in the studio, Dr. William Barry. And we'll be getting ready to open up the new semester for him. It'll be the first time as president at Slippery Rock. The number of programs at Slippery Rock continues to grow, and you continue to get accreditation for your programs. You continue to get awards. I noticed we had a news release just a couple of days ago, in fact, that the graduate students in physical therapy are going to be opening up a pro bono clinic this fall that will be open to the public.
Yeah, we're excited about that. You know, central to education, in my opinion, is this notion that you when you get a college education, you're part of something bigger than you. You know that nationally, only about 30% of our population has a 4-year degree, and globally, it's only about 7%. And so, one of the things I'm going to tell our students when they come back this year is whether they realize it or not, and you don't always feel privileged, but you really are privileged if you look at the world globally. And there is what I believe, and I don't use it lightly, but I believe it, is there's a sacred responsibility. When you've been given that much, you do have to figure out how it is you're going to return something to society. And I'm going to challenge them not to think about what they're going to be, because everyone says, what are you going to be when you leave? But it's, who are you going to be? And what human problems do you care about that you want to frame and begin to address? And with our physical therapy students, now they're graduate students, but I still believe the same goes for them. They've chosen a career, and they're going to address human health, and that's what they're going to do. And it's just wonderful to see them be able to give back as part of their educational program. But I don't want it to end there. I want our undergraduate students to go out and if hunger is what you're trying to solve, how do you work with a food bank? You mentioned as we're going to the break about St. Vincent de Paul's food bank. Mm-hmm. So students can dedicate themselves to hunger. They can dedicate themselves to fighting ignorance. That's what our education students are doing. So we have to identify these essential human problems, and then we have to figure out, how do we bring our education to address those problems? That way we're part of the greater good, and it's not simply an education so that my bank account gets bigger. It's an education so that the world gets better.
If you went back 15, 20 years ago, a lot of folks would never even heard of a physical therapist. But that's a growing area. There are a lot of jobs there.
Yes.
And Slippery Rock now has a graduate, not only an undergraduate, but a graduate program in physical therapy. I also saw in a recent news release that the physician assistant program is well on the way now to permanent accreditation.
Yes.
This is another area. I mean, the changes in the way that healthcare is delivered in this country are, I mean, it's been a sea change over the past few years. A lot of career opportunities for physician assistants.
Yes, physician assistant is a growing field, particularly in areas where it's hard to attract full MDs, your rural areas, inner cities, the sort of the standard underserved areas, to get a physician assistant out there, that could be the first line of defense, if you will, against real medical tragedy. Mm-hmm. My mother-in-law lives in rural Maine, and her primary health care is brought by both nurse practitioners and physician's assistants, under the guidance of a physician, but there just aren't enough physicians to see all the patients that are there.
I saw a piece on 60 Minutes a year or so ago about an area in the rural South where that was their only health care.
Yeah.
Physician's assistants who traveled, they were itinerant. They traveled on a bus to town.
And if you look at the northern tier of Pennsylvania, you'll see very similar statistics. And so the fact that we can serve the Commonwealth and serve our students, you know, it's the notion of doing well while doing good or vice versa, that's just a great thing because we get to produce medical professionals that the region needs, and they get fantastic jobs that have high growth potential.
Mm-hmm. There's a nursing program too, isn't there?
Yes. Yeah, it focuses primarily on RN to BSN, which is the second half that brings students to their bachelor's degree in nursing. And there's some really, really great data out of the University of Pennsylvania where they've studied outcomes for nurses. And in truth, a bachelor's prepared nurse has much better outcomes for patient care. And I've actually spoke to some of the researchers who've done this work. Actually, it was email. It wasn't on the phone. And we went back and forth a bit because at my previous school, we were working on redesigning a program, so I wanted to ask some questions about it. And one of the things I learned is that they believe, although they don't have clear research yet to prove it, but the general belief is that it's not that bachelor's prepared nurses learn that much more nursing. It's those other things we were just talking about around a liberal arts degree. A bachelor's prepared nurse does a full liberal arts general ed curriculum, and they communicate differently. They question differently. They look at data differently. And so they engage in a patient experience in a different way and a more holistic way. And the researchers believe that's why a bachelor's prepared nurse tends to have better patient outcomes than someone who simply has an RN.
And Slippery Rock's RN to Bachelor of Science in Nursing program recently earned a national top 50 ranking. That's pretty amazing, top 50.
It's a great program. And again, just like the physician's assistant, you're looking at a program here that provides our region with professionals who are in high demand in well-paying jobs. So it's one of those proverbial win-win-win situations where everyone gets what they need.
I just actually, before we went on the air, shortly before you arrived here today, our news director handed me a news release that just came across. I'm searching for it here, and I can't find it. The Princeton Review just came out. Has this reached the Rock yet? The Princeton Review rates Slippery Rock as one of the best colleges in the Northeast.
I don't blame them. I came here because we're one of the best colleges in the Northeast. Look at what you get. You get an incredibly high-quality degree in a campus where students report being some of the happiest students around, mm-hmm. in a safe environment, at one of the more affordable costs in the region. So what's not to love, and why wouldn't we be top?
Well, that's a pretty prestigious ranking from the Princeton Review. That's not your run-of-the-mill wall-of-top ranking or something like that.
Your listeners can't see it, but I'm smiling widely while talking about this because it really is. What does it say? It says to students, you come to Slippery Rock, you're going to get a heck of an education, and you're going to get in an environment that you're really going to enjoy. And that's generally when you think about what a first year college student is thinking about. You're a 17-year-old. You're thinking with in some ways with your eyes and your heart, not always your brain. So you want a place that is going to be fun, attractive, have that weekend sports if you want to go to the football game or the basketball game. I'm stammering because I don't even know the exact number of clubs, but it's in the 200 range of clubs. We have all of this fantastic stuff, and at the end, you get one heck of an education on top of it. Why wouldn't a student love that? And so I'm proud, but I'm not surprised that Princeton Review has said it about us.
You mentioned that you have your week of welcome. Was that,
yes.
Is that the term?
Wow.
Wow,
yeah.
Week of welcome coming up soon. This will be for incoming freshman students.
Yeah.
To kind of get them acclimated a few days before the rest of the students arrive. Although I have seen pictures in years gone by of many of the older students, the upper class persons, can't say upper classmen anymore.
Yeah, upper class people.
Yeah, upper class people have actually come back early.
Yes.
Just to help welcome the freshmen.
Well, you know, and that goes to the point that our students are happy to be here. They really are. I mean, I'm sure there's a student who will, in the next year, tell me about things that are a problem. I'm not delusional. I know that we're not perfect. But by and large, students are really happy to be there. So they want to welcome the next generation and just say, you've come to a great place. This is a fantastic place. I'm looking forward. I've reserved my whole day on move-in day, and I'm going to wander around, and I'm not going to have any sign that says president. I'm just going to start picking up someone's bags and seeing what they have to say to me, and eventually they'll figure out who I am, but I'll leave that to them. And it'll be a lot of fun.
Like that TV show where the boss is
undercover boss. Yeah. Yeah. I'll be undercover president. You know, again, your listeners can't see it, but I have a thicker graying beard. Maybe I'll shave it that day so that they won't even know who I am.
Have you had a chance? You couldn't have possibly been around all the buildings already on campus, but I'm interested in the dorms. College dorms aren't like they were a generation or two ago, are they?
Residence halls are amazing. and you are right. I have not been inside every building. I have just recently did almost a half-day golf cart tour because we're 640 acres, so it's a massive campus.
Like I said, it would be impossible for you to be everywhere already.
But I did do a close golf cart tour with our facilities director to really understand the strengths and weaknesses and, you know, what buildings do we have to look carefully at. And we did go past the residence halls. And our residence halls really do run the gamut. We've got some that are very traditional looking residence halls, you and your roommate in what feels a little bit like a barracks. Mm-hmm. That's what I experienced. To full service apartments where you don't even need a meal plan because it's a full apartment and you live independently. And then in between, where a chunk of our residents are, it's an apartment with a sort of a mini kitchen, but you still get a meal plan because you're probably not going to cook all of your meals in that mini kitchen, but it still provides a certain level of convenience for you. And they're lovely.
They're
nicer than my first apartments out of college.
I've seen plans at some schools where they have, how to describe, student will have like an individual bedroom, a small bedroom, but then a common area.
It's a suite.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, we call it a suite.
So that's where, you know, you could have living room couch and TV and all that sort of thing. But again, something I didn't see when I was in undergraduate school.
Let me tell you a benefit to that. And that is that when you live in a suite like that, you really have to be able to negotiate relationships. Mm-hmm. And we're all wringing our hands that kids today, because they text all the time, they can't negotiate relationships. I don't believe that's true, by the way. I think they just communicate in a fashion that we older people don't quite understand. But I think they can negotiate relationships. And this is a way to help them do that face-to-face, which is useful. It also means they have to negotiate simple things like who's going to clean the bathroom. And, you know, you don't leave the bathroom that way. And they learn those basic courtesies that if they've grown up with their own bedroom in their own house with I'll talk about my mother, a doting mother who cleans up after you, then they never had to have those responsibilities. So, you know, college is really, it's about the classroom, and that's important. But the other piece is about transition to adulthood. And transition to adulthood is learning how to manage those kinds of relationships with people. So that way, when you're in an office setting and you're sharing a kitchenette in your office, you don't leave it like a pigsty because you've learned how to do that somewhere else. And so I think it's all part of the educational experience.
That's a big change for most students who have not lived away from home, at least for any length of time, until they come to school.
Yeah.
And that's a totally different experience. Something else that's kind of different is adjusting from, and the vast majority of students will be coming from high school into college. It's a different learning environment. Many years ago, I did some post-baccalaureate work at Slippery Rock, and they had a mandatory session that everyone had to attend on the difference between learning at the high school level and learning and studying at the college level. And I said, well, I've already got a degree. I'm just doing some post-bac work. I said, no, everybody that comes in has to take. It was a wonderful session, really, talking about how there's nobody watching over you anymore. You know, you're on your own, and stressing individual initiative as opposed to just having an instructor tell you exactly what to do. It was a wonderful thing.
That's right, and having people transition to independence is what we're all about. And so during our week of welcome, and then during our first year seminar, those messages are reinforced that now it's time for you to steward your own education. In high school, people stewarded you. Mm-hmm. Now you need to steward yourself. And we do that in how students pick their classes. We do that in how they need to engage with their advisors, and they need to own that relationship, how they need to go to their faculty office hours. Their faculty aren't going to chase them around and find out where's your homework. They need to engage in that way. And for some folks, that's a tough adjustment to figure that out. Another thing I'm going to tell the first-year students, if we get here long enough, I will do my whole first-year speech on your show. But another thing I'm going to tell them is that part of college is finding a mentor. And there's actually some good research from a guy who did his work at Harvard. And what he did was he looked at students who reported, these are college graduates, people at graduation. Some of them reported college being, oh, it was fine. It was great. I got my degree. Others reported this incredibly transformative experience. And the ones who discussed the transformative experience almost all mentioned a mentorship relationship that they developed. And what I will tell the students is, don't think that you're going to sit in the cafeteria and a faculty member is going to come up and say, hey, I want to be your mentor. What's going to happen is you're going to find a faculty member who has a fascinating research project. Mm-hmm. And you're going to ask him, can I join your lab? Or you'll ask her, can I be in your studio? Can I come work on your sociology project? Whatever it may be. And so that's going to be central to a student experience, but that takes the student having initiative. You can get through college and not have that experience, but if you do so, you're wasting an opportunity. And so part of what I'm going to tell our students is don't waste that opportunity, because you're not going to get another one.
I know a lot of Superior students have done that. I saw a feature story a couple of weeks back of a student who was working this summer at the Carnegie Museum, cataloging fossils down there, and that was hopefully what he was going to do in his career. And what a wonderful summer experience.
Those are great opportunities, and I get the same press releases as you do, and I read them the same way you do, because I'm so new to the place, that every time something comes across my desk, it's still, wow, we do this too? Yeah. And I got to tell you, it's like a kid at Christmas time. Wow, this is great. And I read one about students doing research on our campus. Mentored undergraduate research is a fantastic way to get to know your faculty well, and it's a fantastic way to build your resume, whether you're going out into the work world or you want to go on for further graduate study. And I'm going to do everything I can to foster that on our campus and really encourage our faculty and our students to take advantage of that incredible relationship. You know, one of the challenges for a student who's going to, say, a larger research institution is they may have a deeper research pedigree than Slippery Rock, but the people getting that real research experience are graduate students. Because we're so dominated by undergraduates, our undergraduates get some experiences that are sometimes reserved for graduate students at other places. And it's just a fantastic opportunity, and everyone should take advantage of it. I badgered both of my kids at school to figure out where you fit outside of the classroom. And for some people, it's going to be in student government or a club. For other people, it's going to be in someone's lab. And my daughter, who's a senior at a different school, has a wonderful mentor. And she's studying engineering, and so she's a young woman engineer, and she found a mature woman engineer to be her mentor. And it's just been a fantastic thing for her, and I want that for every student who comes to Slippery Rock.
There's also something to be said for the college experience in general. We've talked a lot about education and preparing for a career, and that's certainly important. But the college experience, make sure that those generally 4 years don't pass by without enjoying the camaraderie of being on campus. Sports, Slippery Rock has a long history of success in a variety of different sports. And, of course, football season will be starting here soon. And that's, hey, go to the stadium and enjoy a football game once in a while.
That's exactly right. I'm the honorary captain of the first game, so everyone needs to be there. But it is taking the whole experience. And it's not just the social piece. It is when you start taking the whole experience, you start figuring out where you fit in the world, where you want to be a leader. Some people want to be a leader traditionally in student government. Other people want to be a leader at a theater production. And they're both valid. So getting involved really lets you find that thing that captures you, because you need to be sustained for the 4 years. And some days it's going to be your academics. I hope most days it's your academics. But some days it's going to be something else is the reason why you say, okay, I want to get up and I want to get involved in this. I was a Division III athlete. And I will tell you right now, my grades were better in season than out of season, because the structure of my practices helped me structure my time, because time management is a huge thing in college. And there were times where it was a challenge for me to just say, okay, how do I stay motivated? And sometimes it was my teammates. Sometimes it was the class. I had a great English professor my senior year, Mr. DiMaria, who I'll talk about in my speech, who taught me in ways I never imagined I could be taught. Mm-hmm. But other semesters, it wasn't like that, and it was part of either I was in student government as well. It was student government, or it was athletics. You said one thing before and kind of smiled when you said, and hopefully just 4 years. I want to put in a plug for just 4 years. I think students have to think really carefully about how they manage their time. They have 8 precious semesters, and they have to map themselves to graduate on time, because the greatest hidden cost of college that no one thinks about is year 5. And if people finish in 4 years, college stays pretty affordable. And so people really have to think carefully about, how do I do it in 4 years? You listen to your advisor. You do well in your classes. You don't drop a class because you're failing it. You do what you're supposed to do, and you graduate on time. It's the greatest way to save money in college.
We're chatting with Dr. William Barry. He's the new president of Slippery Rock University. Got to squeeze in one more break here, and we have a little bit more time to chat with Dr. Barry, so stick around. More to come here on It's Your Turn on WISR, the Thursday edition. We'll be back right after these words.
Come hear music spanning over 4 decades and enjoy a buffet dinner all in one night at the Tanglewood Entertainment Center in Lindora. Relive the 50s and 60s with the Doo-Wop Shop featuring Bill Reichert, and then jump to the 70s, 80s, and beyond with The Voices. You can hear it all on Saturday, August 11th. Doors open at 6, dinner by Chef George at 7, showtime at 8. As always, it's BYOB. Tickets are only $25. Call 724-287-00.
Summer is in full swing at Osterling's Lawn and Garden. Enjoy the outdoors with charcoal, Conjäger spices and meat marinades, oil lanterns, flashlights, poison ivy soap, and Nature's Defense deer repellent. Care for your animals with dog and cat warmer, horsefly wipes, horsefly masks, plus pick up grain-free dog biscuits and fresh-made horse, pig, sheep, and chicken feeds. You can find it all at Osterling's Lawn and Garden in Butler.
We're chatting on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. For just joining us, Dave Malarkey's my name. Dr. William Barry is with us here in the studio. He is the new president of Slippery Rock University. The 4 years of college, I dare say, Dr. Barry, probably do more to shape your personality toward adulthood than any other 4 years of your life. There's a lot of people who look at the time they entered college and then 4 years later when they graduated could be a totally different person.
It's a truly transformative experience if the students make the most of it. And I think that has a lot to do with where we are as people developmentally. The late section of adolescence is the part where the frontal lobes of the brain, there's some brain science, and I'm not going to say much more about that because I don't know much more, and I'm sure there's a psychologist out there who'll correct me, but I do know that there's this maturation that occurs. It's also the time where we allow our students, and I don't think this is a bad thing, to be a little narcissistic. And they could sit for a second, they can really think about what I was talking about before, their place in the world. What is it I want to solve? Where do I want to be? Not just what job do I want to do? And if we craft that time for them well, they leave as caring, thinking people who engage in the world in a meaningful way. They just don't go out and do jobs.
And most people will meet a great diversity when they're on campus that they would not have experienced otherwise. I know in my personal experience, when I was a freshman in undergraduate school, my first roommate was a young gentleman, an African-American gentleman from Philadelphia. Now, I had spoken to African-Americans before, but never at any length. And it was a marvelous experience, an enriching experience for that year, which I would never have had otherwise.
My eldest daughter will tell you the same thing. Her roommate was an African-American woman. We're of European descent. And it was the first time she had ever really had in-depth and relational exactly. conversations with someone. She'd had pleasantries, mm-hmm. and she is a very open-minded kid, but had never actually had to truly engage with someone. And so that's really important. And at Slippery Rock, the truth is we have to do better around diversity. We have to bring more diverse students to our campus so that our students get more of that diversity. In fact, we're in the process now of hiring someone who's in charge of helping to attract international students to our campus. And there are some who say, well, why are we, taking seats that could go to students from Pennsylvania and giving them to international students? And my response is because it's as important for the Pennsylvania students mm-hmm. to interact with people who are different than them than it is for us to help international students interact with us. And so I'm excited about the possibility of expanding our students' horizons. Now, that person's job will also be to help our students study abroad so that more of our students can experience the international themselves somewhere else. But for some students, they will not be able to. Either their academic program will be such, or they'll be struggling academically, or their finances might not work out. So the idea that we could bring an international experience to them is really important. And it's particularly important at an institution that's primarily a regional school, because we draw most of our students from Western Pennsylvania. We're not even getting the diversity of a student from California. I mean, we have a few, but you know what I'm saying? We don't have a critical mass of students from other parts of the country who have a different cultural outlook. And if you ever spent any time in the Deep South, I was actually in Texas recently visiting my daughter. It is a different place. We have a lot in common, but there are many subtle cultural differences. Mm-hmm. I just moved from the extreme East Coast to what I feel is much more of a Midwestern environment where I am now. And there are subtle cultural differences. If you draw students only from your region and students who tend to look alike and with similar backgrounds, there's less of a chance that they're going to experience that kind of cultural difference. And cultural difference makes you facile. It makes you ask questions. It makes you question the other culture, but it also makes you question your own. It makes you want to understand more. Why do I do things the way I do? Why do I think this? And the only way to do that is to force a diversity of opinion on our students.
As a college president, Dr. Barry, do you worry about the increasing cost of college education?
You have to worry about the increasing cost of college education. And I think about it regularly. As you may or may not know, the PASHI Board of Governors has been talking about giving local campuses a little bit more freedom mm-hmm. in how they set their pricing. And so I've been thinking really carefully about what should Slippery Rock's strategy be on that. And you never want to price yourself out of your market. You know, that being said, I'm not afraid of a little bit of student debt or a reasonable amount of student debt for students, including my own two daughters. I'm a person of means. I could afford to pay my daughter's college education. I have insisted they both take out student loans because I believe you value something more if you have skin in the game. And mm-hmm. they will both graduate in 4 years. I don't think it's coincidental that they're paying for part of their education, that they've said, okay, we're going to be done in 4 years. So I think I think you have to worry about student debt and you have to worry about price. But I also think that a little bit of debt, a reasonable amount of debt, makes sense. And if you look at Slippery Rock right now, our loan default rate is less than 5%. The national loan default rate is greater than 11%. That suggests to me that at Slippery Rock, we've hit the right balance because our students leave and they're able to get jobs and pay their debt. So I think we're striking a good chord. But costs are always rising, And so we have to figure out, how do we keep up with inflation? How do we pay our bills? How do we keep the lights on? But also, how do we relieve our students' burdens? And part of that is coming up with novel partnerships with local businesses to provide scholarships and other parts of the education. And part of it is seeking donors in a way that state college presidents haven't had to do historically. There was once a mindset that, oh, it's a state college, it's supported by the taxpayers, therefore we don't need to do philanthropy. In fact, there were points where presidents were actually discouraged from doing philanthropy for those reasons. Mm. That's not the case now. Part of my job is to go out and talk to people and be a bit brazen and ask, what can you do to help support students today so that the next generation is stronger than the previous one? And I don't mind doing that because I think our cause is good. And so I need to go out and I need to ask people for money in a way that state college presidents haven't had to do. But if you look at the trend line of state support, as grateful as I am that the legislature gave more money to the Pashi schools this year, it still doesn't cover our increasing costs. And as a percentage, state support is still diminishing. At Slippery Rock, it's anywhere between 25 and 30%, depending on the allocation and what our expenses look in a year. I don't know the statistics perfectly, but I bet you 10 years ago it was 50 to 60%. And so as that support diminishes, it has to come from somewhere else. So it's either going to be from students' pockets or from philanthropy or other types of partnerships.
I see lots of stories about the faculty members at Slippery Rock, for lack of a better phrase, continuing education. It was a story of a faculty member who was in China during this summer. Someone who was somewhere else. Another faculty member, I think it was Aaron Cohen, just published a book. This is important, do you think, not in addition to the regular teaching in the classroom?
Scholarly and service activity amongst our faculty is central to what they do. You know, some people who don't really understand what we do say, oh, they just spend that time in the classroom and the rest of the time is off. That's not true. If you are a true scholar and a true teacher scholar, which is what we have, you have to remain current in your field. You have to be active in your research, because that's how you bring that currency back to your classroom. So I'll use myself as an example. My PhD is in education. I was a middle school teacher who went and got a PhD, and I taught teachers for many years. And if I were to go back in the classroom today without any kind of retooling, so to speak, I would be obsolete. Because in truth, as I became an administrator, and I've been out of the research loop in my field for a while now, so I don't know what the current research is and the current thinking is. My area was special education policy. Laws have changed since I was a professor. Now, I know that they've changed, but I can't tell you the nuances. I don't follow it that carefully. So before I could enter the classroom again, I would take at least a year to rebuild my program of scholarship and go out and do primary research to understand the field, so that when I went in and I spoke to the students, I was telling them the current truth, not the truth of 20 years ago, but the current truth. And that's the important thing. And that's why I will always argue, even at a teaching institution, our faculty have to remain active scholars, and we have to support scholarship as best we possibly can. It's not a luxury. People view it as a luxury, but it is not. And the same goes through for our creative faculty, our dance faculty, and our theater faculty. They need to be they need to be engaged in the arts. Our musicians need to be actively engaged in the arts so that they stay current in their fields, so that when they talk to students, they're talking to students from a place of current authority, not ancient authority.
Slippery Rock University has shown continued and sustained growth over the past several years. In fact, I think you mentioned for the past 2 or 3 years, it's been a record enrollment every year. Is there enough space on campus? Have you talked to the facilities people there? have enough space to put everybody in?
The answer to that is yes and no. We're not in an immediate crisis, but as I mentioned before, I really see us growing towards a school of engineering over time. Mm-hmm. We do not have the space today to really house a true school of engineering. So we are going to have to build to that. There are millions of dollars in projects going on our campus right now. Our safety management building is undergoing a massive renovation. Our theater is undergoing a massive renovation. So we're investing now. But to be the slippery rock that we need to be in 10 years, we will have to build. I'm still learning and figuring out exactly where that is. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that we're going to need to do something for engineering. So that's one I can say unequivocally today that that has to happen. I don't know the rest of what has to happen. I do know that we are, at any given time, well over 90% full in our residence halls. So there will be a point where we'll have to address that if we continue to grow. But I don't know the specifics of where it has to be. Again, it's only been 40 days, and I've promised myself my main focus for the first semester to two semesters is really going to be learning and not to send out a whole bunch of theories on what I think is right for Slippery Rock, because the folks here have been doing it right for a really long time, and who am I to come in and just say, oh, no, that's wrong and this is wrong. I really need to learn, and that's what I'm taking my time to do.
You can have a mission, a vision, a dream. It's hard to be too definitive, though, about just what college education is going to look like 10 years from now. Will there still be an emphasis on bricks and mortar? Will there be more and more online education 10 years down the road? Who knows?
I think there will be more online education, but I don't think you'll ever lose bricks and mortar. I think that the personal interaction for some students is what they need. And so I don't fear an online school putting us out of business. We do some online programming. I'm all for that. I think modality to meet the student, wherever the student is, but I do think brick and mortar will be important for at least for the rest of my career. I can't tell you what's going to happen 50, 60, 70 years down the road. Mm-hmm. But I think that brick and mortar in the near term and that human interaction is something that that people crave, and I think it'll be here. In terms of, having those dreams, my dream for Slippery Rock is to continue its trajectory. I can't tell you specifically how we do that. I'm sure if I ask 100 people on campus, I'll get at least 90 different answers. But we need to continue our trajectory, and that is bringing prosperity to the region and opportunity to our students. And that's our goal. And whether it's with this new program or that new program, we'll let fate figure that out. I do think a key, though, is to have students, even our students who are in specialized, business or medical programs, have that strong liberal arts core that allows you to remain a lifelong learner so you can retool over time. There's a cliche out there that half the jobs that will exist tomorrow don't exist today. I don't know if it's truly half, but I think the concept is right, is that there are jobs that we can't even conceive of today that will exist tomorrow, and someone has to do it. I went to college in the 80s. A lot of my peers work in internet-based businesses. My wife went to college in the 80s. She has an internet-based business. The internet didn't exist then, but we had the skills to see the possibility there and work with it. And I think our students need the skills to take advantage of whatever the next internet is, and that is those basic core learning principles of understanding how to communicate, understanding how to read text, and understanding how to read and interpret data. And once you can do that, you can retool yourself pretty easily.
One final area as our time begins to run short here today. Any college administrator these days, sadly, has to be concerned about safety on campus. I'm sure that's one of your top priorities. And it's not just from outside agencies. We hear bad stories about things happening to people who are walking across campus, at night and so on and so forth. I'm sure you'll be reviewing that with your safety officers. You said the safety department is undergoing refurbishment.
Well, that's actually we have a degree in safety management. That's undergoing refurbishment. That's what's undergoing. But yes, we do have a safety. We have a campus police force. We have a student life staff who are all involved in student safety. And at a basic level, student safety is more important than the education, because if you're not safe, you can't learn. Mm-hmm. And so we think carefully about that all the time, whether it's physical safety, whether it's that sense of belonging and feeling safe in your environment. All of that really does matter. And so that's part of what this week of WOW, the week of welcome, WOW, I just made a new term, week of WOW. Part of what that's all about, too, is teaching folks what are the shared norms of our community. What might have been okay in your high school locker room is not okay here. What might have been okay in the back of a pickup truck as you and your friends are driving around is not okay here. And this is why. It's not because we want to make up rules. It's because We are a community, and in 4 years, everyone should emerge safe, whole, happy, and educated. And we need to assure that. So we have to we do emphasize our shared norms on a regular basis, and we do it from day one, and we have code of conducts system, as you might imagine. And all of that is around these are our shared norms. And whenever possible, we really avoid punitive and we look towards educative. Because my goal is not to punish a freshman who does something that's kind of knucklehead. My goal is to teach that freshman that this is why we don't do that, because we want that person to be a better person in our society. And so we start from day one with that, and it will continue to the day they leave.
Dr. William J. Berry, he's the new president of Slippery Rock University, visiting with us today. Welcome to Slippery Rock. Welcome to Butler County. Welcome to Western Pennsylvania, Dr. Berry.
Thank you so much. You know, this has been great talking to you for this hour. And I have to tell you that our friends and neighbors in Slippery Rock and all around Butler County have been fantastic. My wife and I went out to the Big Butler Fair. We try to get out wherever we can. And I can't tell you how excited people have been to see us and how warm the welcome's been. I said earlier this feels more Midwestern than the East Coast, because I grew up on the East Coast. And it really does. There's a welcoming sense in Western Pennsylvania that you just don't experience in other places. So we've just been thrilled to be here, and I'm thrilled to talk to you today.
Well, I'm sure I can speak for all of our listeners in saying it's nice to meet you. It's nice to have you here today.
Thanks for having me.
More to come on It's Your Turn. We take a break. We'll come back, chat with our next guest, Jim Miller, who'll be joining us by telephone on the Thursday edition of It's Your Turn. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Butler Ambulance Service not only serves the largest portion of Butler County for 911 ambulance response, but they also offer CPR and first aid training classes and are a leader in wheelchair van assistance too. Butler Assist Coach, a division of Butler Ambulance, provides county residents with medical and non-medical wheelchair van transportation for general doctor visits, shopping, or even transportation to an event. To learn more, visit butlerambulance.com, or to schedule a transport, call 724-283-4385. Butler Ambulance Service. Care you can count on.
Hop the bus. Leave the driving up to us. We're going your way.
Butler Transit now provides weekday transportation to and from Pittsburgh for just $5 one way. No worrying about traffic or expensive parking fees. Free Wi-Fi is also available. Park at a convenient park and ride, or hop on the bus at the downtown bus terminal. Senior 65 and up, ride free with a senior pass. For more information, visit butlertransit.com.
Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us. We're going your way.
Very important subject, listeners, to discuss here on the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. Welcome. My name is Dave Malarkey. Our guest chatting with us by telephone is Jim Miller. He is the creator and the editor of Savvy Senior, a weekly question and answer column for seniors and those who support them. Jim Miller, nice to meet you. Great to have you with us here today.
Yeah, Dave, thanks for having me on your program.
There's a campaign that's underway across the country, and it's interesting. It's called Have the Talk of a Lifetime. Have the Talk of a Lifetime. Jim Miller, what's this all about?
Well, it's kind of a twofold project. The first part of it is about helping families connect a little bit better. It's about having meaningful conversations about what matters to them most and what they hope to pass on to future generations, things like that. And the second part is really about helping families have important end-of-life conversations about how they want to be remembered and how they want things handled after they're gone. Because the reason behind this is because families don't have, these types of conversations because they're awkward or uncomfortable or they don't think about it. So the campaign is all about talking and communicating with your older loved one and connecting and then being able to have these important conversations that we all need to have.
Mm-hmm. And families, quite frankly, given American lifestyle these days, families aren't together as much as they used to be whenever it was very common for families to live in the same town or even the same neighborhood. Now, different parts of the country, and you might only be getting together a couple of times a year on major holidays, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And that's a great time to be able to have these conversations. You know, you can do it via video phone as well, but those personal times of family get-togethers or reunions or whatever, it's a great time to be able to sit down as a family and talk about things like this.
Well, let's talk about this because, let's face it, many adult children don't know a lot of details about their elderly parents' end-of-life plans. And this is important to know. You mentioned, Jim, it's not the easiest thing to bring up sometimes, but you need to do it, don't you?
You do, you do. And it's important for from one standpoint, because it helps you avoid problems. Because a lot of families, by having these conversations, you can prepare, you can learn about how people are prepared. For example, legal documents. We all need, you know, like a will, a power of attorney, advanced directive documents like that. So having these conversations can help either prompt you to make the documents if you don't have them, or update them if you do have them, because that's always important to do as well. It also helps families organize important financial information that can help their adult children, you know, execute their long-term care and estate plans. Because if you don't have this information, you don't, a lot of kids don't even know how much money their parents have, or they don't know where it is. And all of these create a real messy situation at end of life if you don't have these conversations, you don't know this information. So as an adult child, it really provides some incentive to really take action on this, because it helps avoid a real messy, problematic situation at end of life. And it also helps older, you know, seniors, gives them some peace of mind to know that their affairs are in order as well.
Yeah. For this campaign, Jim Miller, you've teamed up with the Funeral and Memorial Information Council, FAMIC. I must confess, that's an organization I had not heard of before. Have you worked with them previously, Jim?
No, I never have, yeah. They have an acronym they use, FAMIC, if you'd rather. Because the Funeral and Memorial Information Council is a mouthful. But yeah, they represent the funeral industry and about planning ahead. And I mean, planning ahead is just a good thing. It's with anything that we do, if you give a little thought and plan ahead, you're always a little bit better off for it.
Well, this organization, FAMIC, has actually come up with an idea to help break the ice a little bit for these conversations. They have cards, I guess, right?
Yeah, they do. They're pretty cool. They're conversation cards, and they're like a deck of cards. And there's 50 in a deck, and they have questions on them. Some of them are more serious, some of them are lighthearted, but they're cards that you play as a family, where you deal out a card to each person, and they ask you questions about your life. You know, who's most influential to you? You know, some just things that can help you open up and learn about your loved one that you may not know about otherwise. So it's a fun way to kind of push families in the direction of, you know, connecting and learning about things that are important to them. So it's a great icebreaker, and it's really fun for those holidays or for weekends that you're together. And it helps younger generations, grandkids, connect with their grandparents better, because grandkids in today's world are always on their cell phones all the time, consistently. So this helps you to put the phone down and pick up the cards, and it's a fun way to be able to connect and get to know about your grandparents in a way that you may not even know about at all.
You could do this one-on-one. I would suggest, though, probably the most comfortable way would be to gather members of the family around, you know, the kitchen table or something like that, and have everybody take part. What do you think, Jim?
Yeah, I think that's a great way to do it. And some of the cards, like the questions on there would be like, how do you want to be remembered? What's the best lesson you learned from your mom or dad or other role model? You know, what personal events have shaped your life most? What's been the most influential person in your life? What's the scariest thing that ever happened to you? So just a wide variety of stuff that everybody can participate in. And you just get to know each other in a little bit more deeper, meaningful way.
It's so important to talk about these things while there are still people around who remember. I know I was in conversation actually just a few weeks ago, Jim, with one of my siblings. And the question came up, just as a matter of course, in what cemetery is one of our relatives buried? And I didn't know, and my sibling didn't know either. And then we suddenly were rueing the fact that probably everybody who does know has now died. And, you know, we needed this information years ago.
Yeah, you need it. That creates some urgency to it too, because you know not everybody's going to be around forever. So you need to take the opportunity now while you have the time to be able to talk to your loved ones. And it's interesting. There's the Ancestry.com has done some different surveys on this, and they found that you know grandkids do not have a very good understanding in today's world about their grandparents. A lot of them don't even know how their grandparents met, and a big percentage of them didn't even know what their grandparents did for a living. So, I mean, it's just we've kind of become such a technology-focused world, we kind of lose a lot of, you know, meaningful connection and family stories. And that's what the campaign is about. It's about connecting and then some of the resources that we have on the website and the conversation cards help families connect in a more meaningful way and then have those important conversations about end of life.
So there's a website for this too, Jim Miller?
Yeah, there is. It's called talkofalifetime.org. It's all together, talkofalifetime.org, where you can go and you can get your conversation cards and you can get all kinds of resources about how to connect and have family conversations. And I'll tell you another popular thing too, Dave, is a lot of families today some make videos of their elder loved ones where they talk about things that are meaningful to them and things that their greatest accomplishments, their greatest regrets, and they make little video films of their loved ones so they can share it with their children and grandchildren. It's a great gift to be able to give yourself and your family and to be able to capture it from your older loved ones. And the Talk of a Lifetime is a great resource to give you all kinds of questions to help you set up interviews and talk to your aging loved ones and put together like a little video or audio recording. It's a wonderful gift for family members to give to each other.
Much, much easier to do today. If you go back even 10, 15 years, you needed one of those expensive video cameras. Today you can do it with your phone, you know.
That's exactly right. I mean, take that technology that I've been complaining about so much and put it to some good use, and it doesn't take you, I mean, you can do the video for free on your phone, for sure.
We have a few more minutes, listeners, to chat with Jim Miller about having the talk of a lifetime and how to do it, how to get started. We'll take a quick break, pick up our conversation with Jim. Here on It's Your Turn on WISR right after these words.
Come hear music spanning over four decades and enjoy a buffet dinner all in one night at the Tanglewood Entertainment Center in Lindora. Relive the 50s and 60s with the Doo-Wop Shop featuring Bill Reichert, and then jump to the 70s, 80s, and beyond with The Voices. You can hear it all on Saturday, August 11th. Doors open at 6, dinner by Chef George at 7, showtime at 8. As always, it's BYOB. Tickets are only $25. Call 724-287-00.
Hey folks, have you heard about Going Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center? Yeah, they're located just off Newcastle Road, Shockey Lane, right behind King's and Villa Grande. Going Postal Butler. They package your items for shipping. And that takes care of a situation that sometimes can be a real bother. You know, you got to get the wrapping paper, the string, the tape, whatever you need. They'll do it for you. And you can ship any way you want to, FedEx, UPS, U.S. Postal Service. They will package your items for shipping at Going Postal Butler. Other services they offer, copying, scanning, faxing, mailbox rentals, custom boxes. They have an official notary, also greeting cards, even a lottery agent. Going Postal Butler, 140 Shockey Lane. That's just off Newcastle Road, right behind King's and Villa Grande restaurants. It's in the Shockey Mini Storage area. For more information, give them a call, 724-841-0044. Going Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick 2 is 26, 26. The pick 3, 463. The pick 4, 7066. The pick 5, 08621. And the treasure hunt is 3, 4, 10, 12, and 25. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $10,000.
Welcome back. I'm Dave Malarkey. Our guest on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR is Jim Miller, and we're talking about having the talk of a lifetime with older family members. Jim Miller, in case you're joining us a little bit late, is the creator and the editor of Savvy Senior. That's a weekly question and answer column for seniors and those who support them. You're in quite a few newspapers with your column, Jim, I guess, right?
Yeah, it runs in over 300 papers across the country.
Ooh,
and
wow.
It's got a readership of about 4.5 million people, so yeah.
How did you get this column started? Did something happen in your life, or what led you to do this?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. I've been doing it for 17 years now, and I started off, I was caregiving for my mom. She had breast cancer, and my dad was, you know, real involved with her care as well, and they both passed away at the same time. My dad had a heart attack, and my mom ended up succumbing to breast cancer, and so after I lost them, I was, you know, quite distraught. I was completely unexpected to lose my dad. So I started doing some volunteer work at a retirement community to kind of help me get through the grieving process. And when I was there, I started a little column to help promote the retirement community. And that's kind of when I kind of stumbled upon the need for information for seniors because, you know, seniors, there's so much out there and there's a lot of programs and resources available to them that they don't know about. There's a lot of scams. There's a lot of, you know, there's just a lot of bad stuff that's out there, but there's a lot of good stuff. So how do they find it? And I kind of started it as a conduit to kind of help people just, you know, get information that could help improve their life and their quality of life. And that's how it started. And I messed around with it for about a year and kind of, you know, learned about things. And then I got the idea that I could share this with other papers. So I came up with the name Savvy Senior, and I started marketing it around the country. And that was back in 2002. And it went from the one paper, which was the local paper here in Norman, Oklahoma, to be in about 400 papers. And so that's kind of how it got going. And then I got some national press. The New York Times did a story on me, and I got on the Today Show. I was on the Today Show like 35. Been on the Today Show like 35 times. And so, anyway, that's kind of how it started, though.
Well, this is something that I just feel there are so many people out there, so many families who have thought about doing this, who want to do this, but for one reason or another, you know, they've just never done it. And then all of a sudden they find that it's too late and the people that they needed to talk to have died and you can't do it. If you're worried about how to start this conversation, because as Jim Miller said earlier, it can be a little awkward sometimes. Although my guess is, Jim, honestly, once you get going, most elderly relatives, whether it's parents, grandparents, whatever, they're probably pretty anxious to tell their story once you get started on the process, don't you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think a lot of it is just kind of taking that first step. And, you know, people, if you're uncomfortable or it seems awkward to do that, then use this radio show as your prompt. Say, hey, you know, I was listening to a radio show and they were talking about this, and I think this would be something great for us to talk about, you know, to your mom or your dad. So use this as a prompter to kind of help move your way into it. And then the talkofalifetime.org website has all kinds of conversation starters that are great for people as well. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think that there's, you know, certain families, like my dad was not very open. So I understand the challenges of it for some families because my dad was a World War II veteran. And, you know, a lot of older people in today's world were Vietnam vets, and they might not have the ability to open up or have these intimate conversations. But there's ways that you can kind of penetrate that with some of these techniques that talkofalifetime.org offers to kind of help you, you know, get into your loved one's heart through the back door if you need to do that. So lots of tools that are out there.
And sometimes you can start with something easy. If you feel you have an older relative who's hesitant to talk about things that are too personal, to start off with. Somebody asked me last year, it was just an innocent question. It was actually one of my sisters. Asked me what's the first movie you can ever remember seeing, and it took me back for a second. I had to stop and think, and then I remembered what it was, and that led to an interesting conversation for several minutes. You can start with something like that, and there are more ideas like this on this deck of cards that you can get, right?
Yeah. There's lots of ways. You don't jump right into something that's real heavy. You kind of, it's like any conversation. You start off with something a little lighter, like you're talking about, your favorite movie, your favorite music, you know, just memories, photo albums, looking at photo albums or old memorabilia are great ways to stir memories. Or just, you know, what was it like for you back, you know, when you were, you know, 25 years old, first getting started, or when you first got married, or all those things. They just, people want to be understood, and no matter how old, and it's just, I think it's, the campaign is just about reconnecting, and I think it's so important in today's technology world where people are so disconnected, it really becomes very important to do that, especially among young people and the old people. I mean, grandkids and grandparents, there's so many great ways to be able to connect, and we just need to take the incentive to do that.
I never thought about the photo album. That's a fabulous idea. Get out an old photo album, set it out in the middle of the kitchen table, and everybody gather around. And you know, if that isn't a conversation starter, then you got problems.
yeah, that's right. That's right. Because, you know, those photos will stir all kinds of memories and bring up all conversations and things that you might not even know about. You know, it's interesting, a quick story here. When my dad passed away, I mean, I love my dad, but we didn't talk about it. We weren't super intimate because dad was difficult to do that. But when he passed away, I was, after his funeral, I was talking to some of his friends that he went to high school with, some guys that I knew of, but I didn't really know. And they were telling me stories about my dad that just, like, no way. They were telling me stories about things that he did when he was, like, in high school or when he was in his early 20s. And I just found it to be quite interesting and funny because these are stories that I never knew about him. Because when I was, my dad was 40 years old when I was born. And so I only knew my dad as a middle-aged and older man. I didn't know him as a young person. And so when I was hearing these stories, I found it to be quite, you know, enlightening and very heartwarming, and just kind of funny because dad did a lot of, you know, silly kid things like we all do. But when you hear about it from your father, it kind of like, wow. And it's just kind of, it always kind of, you know, it makes me smile when I think about that. But that's why I think this is so important, because this gives you the ability to be able to really get to know a loved one in a different kind of way while they're still alive, which is so important.
Yeah, I know. I came across, actually, it was a family member, a great aunt, who gave me a picture of my dad when he was, I would guess, 8 years old. He was a paper boy delivering the Pittsburgh Sun-Telegraph paper. And there he is with his, you know, the newspaper bag, you know, like the carriers have over their shoulder, wearing shorts. Just absolutely priceless, priceless.
Yeah,
a couple of more questions, Jim, here before our time totally runs out. Think about this, listeners. Most folks, I think, at least know their grandparents' names, even if they're not alive anymore. Do you know the names of your great-grandparents? I'll bet a lot of people don't. If your grandparents have passed away, or even if your parents have died, don't give up on this. I mean, you can talk to aunts, uncles, right, cousins who might have that information, Jim?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, when you're, you know, at family reunions or other family members that you connect with, whether it's online or Facebook or video calls or whatever, yeah, you can find out all kinds of family stuff by talking. And there's probably people in your family that maybe have done family trees and maybe do some ancestry work as well. So there's lots of ways to be able to find out about past relatives and stuff that can enrich your life.
Now, from a practical side, of course, there are legal documents that we would want to know about for aging relatives. You know, do you have a will? Where is it? That sort of thing.
Yeah.
Financial records. You know, do you have insurance policies? Which companies, where are they, so on and so forth. And then also something that this is really awkward, Jim, for many folks, many families, funeral plans. We have to talk about those in advance too, do we not?
It's definitely a good idea to make those preparations ahead of time because, you know, there's a lot of reasons. I mean, number one, it alleviates the adult children's time to it helps them so they don't have to make it at a stressful, difficult time, and it helps, you know, the loved one or the older person determine how they want to be remembered. So it gives you a voice. It saves family grief at a difficult time, and it also is a way to be able to save money too, because you can plan appropriately. You can make decisions, you know, sound financial decisions, and it's just a win-win all across the board to be able to make these preparations ahead of time. Mm-hmm. So this is all part of it, you know, the end of life conversations, the knowing about preparing legally, having the legal documents in place and updated, knowing about the financial resources, where they are, how you want those executed, and also to the end of life plans, the funeral planning. It all is a package that's very, very important to do. It provides great peace of mind, and it really does help things go much, much smoother at the very end of life.
Peace of mind for the older folks, too. I mean, you know, do you want a big formal religious funeral? You want something simple? What music do you want to be played? And I guess there's help, too, on the website, Jim Miller, for these sorts of questions, a detailed list of funeral and memorial planning questions available on the website, right?
Yeah, there is. There's actually, it's a funeral preparation checklist that you can go through. It has all those questions, like you talked about. You know, do you want a religious, you want a formal, you want to be cremated, you want to be buried, all of those questions that can kind of help you sort through things that can help you make sense. You know, a lot of people, they might want to have these conversations, but they don't know what to ask. They don't know what to plan for. TheTalkOfALifetime.org has all that for you. It's laid out in a simple format that can help you, get the questions and the information that you need. It just lays it all out for you, so it makes it easy to do.
Pretty good stuff, folks. Put together a teamwork, actually, with the Jim Miller, our guest, and the Funeral and Memorial Information Council, FAMIC. They have these cards, this deck of cards, to help you get started on these conversations, and also information on the website as well. TalkOfALifetime.org is the web address, and as usual, that's all smooshed together. TalkOfALifetime.org. Jim Miller, partnering with FAMIC, visiting with us. Jim, it was nice to meet you. This is important stuff, and all of your tips will make it much easier, I think, to get these conversations started. Thanks much.
I hope so. Thank you, Dave. Thanks for having me.
Sure. And we'll look for your column, too, The Savvy Senior, syndicated in more than 400 newspapers around the country, Jim Miller. All right. Thanks again.
So long. You bet. Thank you.
On game day, nobody covers the black and gold like the Steelers Football Network.
And it's caught, and into the end zone goes Antonio Brown. How did he do that?
Pre-game, the Mike Tomlin Show, the game itself, and all the post-game analysis happens here all season long on the Pittsburgh Steelers Football Network.
What a game!
The Pittsburgh Steelers open up the preseason on Thursday night in Philadelphia against the Eagles. We'll have the game here on WISR 680 AM. Pregame at 5 o'clock, kickoff at 7. Pittsburgh Steelers football brought to you in part by John Thrower Cement Corporation, Monday Shoes, and Next Tier Bank.
Olivia from Washington. Laid off and trying to keep our little kids from realizing that mommy and daddy haven't eaten in a while.
Roger from California. I'm grateful we could afford our son's surgery. I'm nervous that now we can't really afford food.
Daniel from California. Choosing whether to pay the rent or pay to fix the car to get to work doesn't leave us with much at all. Now we can't even pay for meals.
Donna from Louisiana. The storm just hit, and we went from donating to the food bank to needing it.
Keisha from South Carolina. I've been skipping meals so my two kids can eat, but filling up on water doesn't really work.
Hunger is a story we can end. End it at feedingamerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
It's never been more important to stay in touch with the events and issues that shape our world. And for more than 25 years, Radio Pennsylvania has been the Commonwealth's source for stories and newsmakers impacting your life.
We're taking precautions to prepare for the worst that this storm can deliver.
And I believe that we need an armed, highly trained security officer in every school.
We should not be using mental illness as a scapegoat for things like mass shootings and violence.
Covering your state capital and all corners of the Commonwealth, Radio PA's team of award-winning journalists is on constant watch as your eyes and ears on the front lines of the major events of our time. honored for broadcasting and journalistic excellence by
the Associated Press, the Pennsylvania Association of Broadcasters, the National Association of State Radio Networks, the National Headliner Awards, and many others.
Eight-time winner of the Joe Snyder Award for Outstanding News Service, the top news honor bestowed by the Associated Press in Pennsylvania. The Radio Pennsylvania Network, bringing you closer to Harrisburg and all of your Keystone State.
Have coffee with Kate and Dave Malarkey, weekday mornings at